Good evening, everyone, and welcome to St. Helens. Welcome to Christmas is Coming. Thank you for coming tonight. It's great to see you all. I hope you've had a lovely evening so far, shopping and browsing the stalls, eating yummy canapés and drinking the mulled wine. Before we go any further, we need to do some thank yous, to say some thank yous. So firstly, we want to say a big, big thank you to the organisers of this event tonight. They have worked very hard for the last few weeks and months in the run-up to today. So Col, Eleanor and Ellie, thank you very, very much for today. You have to admit that yet again, it looks amazing and you've done a brilliant job. So thanks, guys. Since early this morning, there's been a team of helpers in the kitchen, chopping, prepping all the canapés. And we also need to thank the men. So without them, tonight would not be possible. So a huge thank you to the men who've been taking your coats, they've been serving you canapés and giving you the mulled wine. A huge thank you, guys, for all your help. So now down to business. Sorry. Now's the more serious part of the evening, where we're going to take some time out from the tinsel and the turkey and the preparations and the decorations, and we're going to think a little bit more about the true meaning of Christmas. And to help us with that tonight, we have Lizzie Smallwood. Lizzie's married to Simon. Simon is a vicar in Dagenham. Yep. They have three children. I don't know their names, but I know their ages, 2016 and 8. And I will come back to that age gap soon, shortly. But Lizzie, before we crack on with your talk, can we just chat a little bit about you, about Dagenham at Christmas time? I hear it's quite bright in Dagenham.
It's known worldwide for its Christmas lights. People spend a fortune doing up the fronts of their houses, and it is magnificent. It's worth getting on the Fenchurch train to Barking, district line to Dagenham, just to see the lights. It's a thing of beauty.
And what about you? You are a vicar's wife.
I am.
I heard on the grapevine you used to play rugby.
I did.
You're a teacher.
I am.
What don't you do? Is there anything else we should know before you start?
What I love about my life, my week, is that I do something different every day. I love that because I'm a bit, I think I'm probably ADH, whatever that thing is, when you can't concentrate very long. So every day is different and I just love that. So Monday is sort of, you know, we do English classes for people that have moved into the area, can't speak English. And then I shop. Tuesday, parent and toddler. And then do some study. Wednesday I teach, Thursday I teach, and then Friday I take my mum to the hairdressers.
I love that.
Yes.
She must have great hair.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And when we first spoke, you were great, and you said to me, you can ask me anything. So I thought, great, carte blanche, here we go, anything. But I will stick to script. But do tell us about the age gap of kid two and kid three. And tell us about the snowy bit as well.
So Sam's 20, he's studying history and ancient history in Exeter. My middle daughter, Ailey, is doing her A-levels. And then we've got Beatrice. And I was 44, and I thought it was the menopause. And it wasn't. And it was all we think, without, you know, going into the gory details, it was just a very snowy winter. And there was one particular... Anyway. Yeah. So it's
very seasonal.
Buy two, get one free. Yeah, it's amazing. But so I was 45 when I had her. But she's glorious. She's glorious, and she's given us a whole new lease of life, really.
Fantastic.
So yeah, very thankful.
And lastly, just before you start your talk, you're a vicar's wife.
I am.
Does that make you a good person? A good person?
No. I just have to ask my children the answer to that question. No, being a vicar's wife probably brings out the worst in me. Being a vicar's wife, I'm a vicar's wife because I'm a Christian, and I'm a Christian because I'm a forgiven sinner. And you wouldn't have to spend very long with me to find that out. It's got nothing to do with being nice or respectable. But I'm going to explain more about that in a minute. Shall we go for it? Okay,
thanks,
lovely.
Lizzie.
Thank you. So, here we go. You should have in your bags that you were given one of these. So if we could all grab those, that would be great. I'm absolutely honest, I can't actually read mine because I haven't got my reading glasses. So I hope you've got yours, but it will come up on the screen as well. So yeah, so if you want to make sure your phones are switched to silent and your bags are on the floor so you can sit comfortably. Okay, so I want you to imagine that you're doing your Christmas shopping. Okay, people are rushing around with bags hanging off every finger. Others are sitting outside cafes sipping their skinny hazelnut gingerbread cinnamon latte with extra cream and a flake. Anyway, when along comes a bit of an overweight scruff dressed in a grey hoodie. And he starts doing keepy-uppies with a football right there in the street, and he's really good. Now, as you can see, this actually happened a while back in a square in Madrid. And after a while, the bloke kicked the ball to a young boy who was walking across the square. And the boy kicked it back, and the two of them started playing football. And after a few minutes, the man stopped. He picked up the ball, he got out a pen, and he signed the ball. And he handed it to the boy, who looked a bit puzzled. And then he peeled off the beard and he took off the sunglasses. And it was none other than Cristiano Ronaldo, football megastar. It's a brilliant... If you watch it on YouTube, it is beautiful. It's lovely. You see, the young boy was in the presence of football greatness and he didn't even realise it. And he could have walked on by. But this bloke was good. He was really good. So he stopped, he engaged, and then his face just lit up with awe and wonder as he met one of the greatest footballers of all time. Well, I'd like to suggest tonight that Christmas is a bit like that true story. We hear about the nativity, and we sort of go, ah, oh, but we walk quickly by. And it's so easy to miss what's really going on. It's easy to walk on by and never discover who it is lying in that manger. Well, this evening is an opportunity to stop and to engage with him, just like that boy did with Ronaldo. To look beyond the outward appearance and to find out who was in that stable the first Christmas night. So what I want us to do is spend a bit of time, if you like, looking at that baby's CV. And my prayer is that as we look at his credentials, we will understand that we are meeting the greatest person ever. And that, like that little boy, we will be astonished. But more than that, we would long to know him for ourselves and understand how his arrival all those years ago affects us, affects you and me. You see, that little boy in Madrid, he got a signed football from Ronaldo, but he probably never met Ronaldo again. But when we engage with the person from Bethlehem, we can enter into a relationship with him that starts now and goes on into eternity. Now, of course, the person I'm talking about is Jesus Christ. So just listen to these words that were written in the Bible a few years after Jesus was around. You can follow it. It will be up on the screen. In the past, God spoke to our ancestors through the prophets at many times and in various ways. But in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, through whom he made the universe. The Son is the radiance of God's glory, the exact representation of his being, sustaining all things by his powerful word. After he had provided purification for sins, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty in heaven. That is quite a CV, isn't it? Well, just a bit of background. This letter, known as the letter to the Hebrews, it was written in the first century AD, and it was written to Christians who were Jewish by birth, but they'd become followers of Jesus Christ. But they were being tempted to abandon Jesus and go back to their old religion. So in these few verses we've printed here, the author focuses on the greatness of Jesus above all others.
Jesus is on a whole different level to any other religious leader or spiritual being. So what does the writer tell us about his true identity? Well, first of all, if you noticed, he's God's final word. Now, I don't know if you've ever done online dating. It wasn't invented when I was little. Or you've even been catfished. Apparently that's a thing. That's terrible. But we know in any relationship we have to speak to someone or write to someone to get to know them. Looking at a photo of their face may give you some clues, but it's not until you start talking that you really find out what someone's like beyond the Photoshop version of them online. Only through speaking and listening do we have real relationships with each other. Now, you may be someone here tonight who's even wondered if God exists. And if so, is it possible to know him? Well, the answer is yes. Because the God who made us in his image has spoken to us so that we can know him. From the very first chapter of the Bible, we discover that God is a speaking God. And in ancient history, BC, the Israelites, they were like a privileged nation. God had spoken to them in the past through people called the prophets. And these were just normal people whom God chose to speak through so that people could hear him and know him and love him. And we can hear God speak too, as you read the prophets, what they said in the Old Testament. So the author writes in verse 1, in the past, God spoke to our forefathers through the prophets at many times and in various ways. If you like, God's message about his plan, it came through bit by bit over many hundreds of years at different times in Israel's history. But it was all pointing to a future time when God's plan would all come together in one person once and for all. So the author says, but now. He says, there's been a change, there's been a development. It's not like the prophets have been sacked, it's not like one of Donald Trump's press secretaries, and what they said no longer counts. No, what they said was all pointing to that first Christmas day. The final voice had arrived on the scene. It says in verse 2, but in these last days, he, God, has spoken to us by his Son. Jesus, God's Son, is God's final word to us. After his resurrection from the dead, when Jesus met with his followers, he said to them, this is what I told you while I was still with you. Everything must be fulfilled that is written about me in the law of Moses, the prophets, and the Psalms. So nothing can now be added to God's word. Nothing can improve on it. Through Jesus, all God's plans and purposes have been completed. Now, anyone could claim to be God's final word. In fact, many people have, haven't they, through history. But at the end of the day, any rational human is going to say, well, prove it. Prove that you are. And that's exactly what Jesus did. In the eyewitness records we have, when Jesus spoke, people were amazed. They were dumbstruck by his authority and his wisdom, his insight and his kindness and his truth. You know, the power of his words was limitless. He spoke and the storm was instantly calmed. The deaf, the blind, the lame were healed. The dead were raised. He just spoke bountiful food into existence for the crowds. And his words spoke into the darkness and unbelief of his enemies' hearts, and they revealed their thoughts and motives. His words reached into the hearts of those who were broken, despairing of the mess that they'd made of their lives. And his words brought them forgiveness and hope and peace. Jesus is God's final word. So let's find out more about this amazing person. We read on in verse 2, whom he appointed heir of all things. So second, Jesus is God's heir. Well, is it that Jesus is heir to a throne like Prince Charles? Well, sort of. You know, Prince Charles is still in line to inherit the throne of the United Kingdom and the incredible wealth and prestige that goes with it because of who he is. He didn't get picked randomly from a selection of applicants for the job. It's just his because of who he is. Now, that's impressive, isn't it? But you know, that is compared to Jesus. Because Jesus isn't a created being like us. He's God the Son, the heir. So all that is God's is his. The crown, the carriages, the corgis. Everything. Every star and every planet, every continent, every nation, every land, every ocean, every resource, every animal, every person, everything in this glorious universe, it's all his. It always has been, and it always will be. That's what it means that Jesus is heir of all things. You know, there's no one waiting in the wings on the off chance, not like my friend James, who is 179th in line to the Swedish throne. Don't fancy his chances. But no, it's all Jesus's forever. Are you starting to sense the greatness of that baby in the manger? And the author continues piling up the credentials of Jesus. Listen again. Through whom he made the universe. So number three, Jesus is God's creative agent. Now, most of us here live in London, and there's building work going on all over the place, isn't there? Trying to ease the housing crisis. Architects planning on paper how to deliver safe, functional, affordable, buildings and houses. But there will come a stage when a construction manager is appointed, and his job is to use all his skill and his practical know-how to turn the architect's design into a reality. He'll oversee the entire construction, from the laying of the foundations to the fixtures and fittings. He makes it all happen. He's the creative agent, the one through whom the whole building is constructed. Now, that's a bit of a weedy comparison, but Jesus is God's creative agent. His project? Well, actually, the universe. Look at verse 2 again. Through whom he made the universe. It was Jesus that made it all happen. Now, I don't know where you stand, but there are people who want us to believe that there was nothing. I can't even begin to imagine nothing. And suddenly that nothing went bang. And from that nothing going bang came everything. Every intricately designed aspect of this universe. When actually, if we're honest, what is staring us in the face is a universe that was designed by someone. From the mind-boggling information stored in a strand of DNA to the vast and complex solar systems in the billions of galaxies, someone infinitely more powerful than us, someone who has the power and the knowledge and the wisdom and the incredible intelligence to design and create each amazing component and put it all together in such an ordered, logical way. Science doesn't disprove God. Science is just us slowly working out what an amazing job Jesus did. And words don't come close to describe what a magnificent universe he's made. Have you been watching Blue Planet? Jesus did that. Are you starting to get a sense of the greatness of the baby in the manger? And it's not like he created it and then just walked away like winding up a clock and just leaving it. No, we're told Jesus is sustaining all things by his powerful word. That means that today, everything that exists and keeps working and spinning and beating and pumping and seeing and breathing and swimming and flying and living does so because Jesus says so, including you and me. He was there with the Father at the creation of the universe, and the Father created the universe through him, and he's sustaining the universe as we sit here in London in 2017. Are you starting to get a sense of the greatness of the baby in the manger? And then listen to his fourth title here. The Son is the radiance of God's glory, the exact representation of his being. So number four, Jesus is God's exact representation. Now this means that Jesus demonstrates to us exactly what God is like. Everything that is God is in Jesus. It's not like, oh, he's got his dad's nose. No, if you look at Jesus, then you see God. And it's not like Jesus is the moon and God is the sun. And if you look at the moon, you see the reflected light of the sun. No, if you look at Jesus, you are looking at God in all his blinding brilliance. Jesus is the radiance of God's glory. Now, I better watch what I say. I'm not sure we've been helped very much understanding God's glory by pictures of Jesus with a little circle of yellow paint around his head and very blonde hair. Wow. The radiance of God's glory doesn't mean golden halos. God's true glory is who he truly is. That which causes the angels to cover their faces in his presence, that it makes them cry out, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord God Almighty." Now, going back to our opening story, that scruff in the hoodie, he was hard to recognise until you stopped and watched what he was doing. And then people were intrigued. This is our Ronaldo moment. When we stop and look at what Jesus said and did 2,000 years ago, we begin to see that Jesus is the exact representation of God's dazzling perfection, his radiance. When the angels announced to Joseph that he was going to be the surrogate father of the Son of God, the writer says, "All this took place to fulfill what the Lord had said through the prophet. The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel, which means God with us." And as we saw earlier, Jesus went on to put his money where his mouth is. His perfect words were matched by a dazzling, perfect life. This was Emmanuel, God with us. So then, I suppose the last question is, why did he leave his father's side and come and live on earth as a human? Well, as we saw earlier, Jesus was the completion of God's plan that the prophets had spoken of. And the shocking answer is that he came to do something for you and for me. The final part of Jesus' CV explains what I mean. Listen again. After he'd provided purification for sins, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty in heaven. So his fifth and final title here is God's purifier. Jesus has provided purification for sin. So, well, what's purification? Well, it's making something or someone completely clean and pure. It's, if you like, decontamination. And what does it say Jesus had to provide this purification from? Well, in verse 3 it says sin. Now, that is a really good old-fashioned Bible word. In our day, sin's really got more to do with Slimming World, hasn't it? And Krispy Kreme donuts, really. But the Bible says, no, it's much more serious than that. Sin is the most universal disease. We all have it. And it's the most deadly disease because we all die because of it, physically, and if our sin isn't dealt with, eternally. Now, if that's true, it's really important that we know what sin is. And the word sin actually means missing the mark. Like in archery, it's an arrow falling short of the target or flying off to the side. Now, we don't like being called sinners, do we? How very dare you? And I'm not as bad as them. There's always someone worse than us, isn't there? But if you don't believe you've got the deadly problem of sin, well, I'm not doing the judging, nor's the person sitting next to you. God's the one who is the judge. And listen to his perfect standard. Standard number one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. Standard number two, love your neighbour as you love yourself. Can you honestly say that you have always hit God's target? I can't. I fail to keep his standard pretty much every minute of every day. I don't love him completely, and I certainly don't love those around me as much as I love myself. And every time you and I fail to hit God's target, it's as if we smear another bit of dirt across our souls. We're messed up. Now, I've got a friend, Rob, who is a pest control officer. Nice work if you can get it. And he, in the summer, got called out to a very high-end London hotel because the chef had a problem with swarms of flies in his kitchen. And when Rob got to the hotel kitchen, he got down on his hands and knees and he started shining his torch around under counters, behind the units. And there was filth everywhere. And the fly larvae was feeding on it. So he said to the chef, "The reason your kitchen is full of flies is because your kitchen is filthy." "My kitchen is not dirty." Actually, I don't know if he was French, but it sounds right. And Rob said, just come and see. You might clean the surfaces, but come and see. And he showed the chef the hidden filth and grime all over the kitchen. And only then did the chef concede that there was a problem with his kitchen and that actually the flies were just a symptom. And we see the flies in our lives, don't we? We see our broken relationships. We see the mess our families and our societies in. We see the flies, but we don't like to own up to the fact that we're the problem. We only look at the surface and we think actually we look quite respectable. But the flies are caused by the grime in our hearts, the selfishness, the hurtful words, the lies, the greed, the gossip. And you know, we have to own up to it because Jesus came for people who know how bad they are, who know that they've had a hand in the messed up relationships, who know that they're making choices that are wrong, who know that they failed to love God as they should, who know that they are missing the target. And the wonderful thing about Jesus is this. Unlike my friend Rob, he doesn't say, "Well, clean yourself up," because he knows we can't. No, he says, "I will clean you up. Only I can do that for you." And this passage tells us that Jesus Christ has done everything necessary to purify us so that we can be friends with God and receive eternal life instead of eternal death. Well, how did he do that? By dying in our place, the death that we deserved. You see, when Jesus, the Son of God, became a man, he kept God's gold perfect standard. Okay, he always lived with God as his number one. He always loved those around him. So he had no dirt. He was pure. He didn't deserve death like we do. Yet because of his love and his compassion, he willingly went to that cross. He took on our filth. And he took the punishment from God that our sin deserves. He died in our place. And because he didn't deserve to die, death couldn't hold him. And on the third day after his death, he was raised back to life, eternal life, never to die again. That is the heart of the Christian message. Not to do with being a good person, not to do with being respectable. Christ's one offering, once for all, for our sin. And the author tells us after that, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high. It's like this, finished, job done. You know, we would be amazed, wouldn't we? If in the near future we got a call from King Charles saying, "Lord, I've come into a bit of cash and I'd like to share it with you and can I interest you in a corgi?" Now, it wouldn't happen, would it? It wouldn't happen, especially not in that voice. But Jesus wants people like us to share his eternal inheritance. People like us. And he has done everything necessary to make it possible. Are you starting to get a sense of the greatness of Jesus? Just look at those titles again. Do you know anyone greater? Please don't walk by this evening and miss out. Stop, like the little boy stopped in the street with Ronaldo. Look beyond who you think Jesus is to the evidence about who he truly is. I want to close this evening by commending the greatest person to you. Now, there's a prayer. I think it's going to come on through. There's a prayer on your bookmark. Now, this could be the first time you've ever heard anything about Christianity. You may have heard it before, but you still don't. You're not convinced. But it may be that you're at the stage when you go, yes, I do see who he is, and I do see why I need him to be my purifier and my king. Well, there's a prayer that you could use if that's you tonight. It's a very simple prayer. It's on the screen. Please take these away and use them in whatever way you will. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lizzie. That was really helpful. Yeah, definitely, definitely. Round of applause. It was really clear and really, really helpful. I don't know what your situation was before you walked into church tonight, what your view of Jesus is, where you stand, how you got to that view of Jesus. But can I encourage you tonight? As we said, Christmas is such a great time to investigate Jesus further. And can I encourage you, in your bags, you've got them, to hand, is Luke's Gospel. And just over the next few days or weeks, read a couple of chapters. And with a pen, tick the bits that you like, put a cross next to the bits that you don't like, and then maybe question mark the things that you're not sure of or you're unclear about. And take it to the friend who brought you tonight, and I know she'll be willing to chat these things through. She'll buy you a coffee, and yeah, just really look into it. Or a drink, whatever, but get her to talk to you about this. We've got carol services as well. We've got lots of carol services here at St. Helens over the next few weeks. Do come back. We'd love to have you. This is the end of the formal bit of the evening, but it is in no means the end of the whole evening. The stalls are still open. There's coffee and tea under the gallery, and brownies should be making their way to you to eat. So, yeah, thank you very much. And on behalf of everyone here, we'd like to wish you a very, very happy Christmas. Thank you.